Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 22nd, 2019. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, I'm in a hoodie. It's a little cold today.
Yeah, it's Florida winter started. It's in the 70s now. So
yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
But what's really terrible about Florida right now is all of the poker violence. I don't know what's going on, but it's
a little amped up.
A little scary. One guy loses a couple of grand to somebody, and he sets them on fire in his car. Another guy shoots two people outside a local room here. What's going on, Scott? Seriously, what's going on? Is that because of the pressure of the holidays?
You know, I went to my Safety Harbor Poker Club on Monday. First time ever I had to rebuy.
Wow.
And then didn't cash after that. You know how many people I shot?
Three?
Zero.
Why, though? I mean,
why? Because I'm a human being. Jesus, what's going on here? What's going on with these people?
Seriously, I mean, maybe it's the guy really wanted to buy his girlfriend a nice gift for the holidays, and the guy beat him out of all his money, so he felt like he had to kill him and take the money back? Or, I mean, I'm not making light of it. This is scary shit.
It's disturbing. It's beyond disturbing.
It is.
But, I mean, it's so you can't make sense of it to the point that you do have to laugh about it, because that's the only way you can cope with it. I mean, it's just crazy.
Last night,
folks out there, when you lose, when you play poker, there's a chance you're going to lose. It just might happen, so you might want to start dealing with that now before it happens.
I'm bowling last night in my league, and like three people come up to me like, I'm glad you're okay. What are you talking about?
You didn't mark yourself safe on Facebook, Chris.
I know. I should have said mark myself safe from, you know, drive-by shootings in the poker community. I mean, it was just, they're like, oh, yeah, I mean, all these people are getting killed and shot in poker, and I know you do poker. And I'm like, don't worry about it. You know, but it was crazy how many people came up to me and wanted to talk to me about it last night. I'm like, God, you know, just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then, like, people are even posting on Ante Up Fans because it's so outrageous.
Yeah.
Well, outrageous. All right, we got some good stuff to talk about too. So
yeah, I was going to say, before we get to the good stuff, since you already started the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I do want to give a shout out to my new good friend John DiSapoli, who I met on the August cruise. Just an amazing guy. First night I saw him at the cocktail party. You weren't on that cruise, unfortunately, but met him on the cocktail party. He's like, man, I've been listening to the show forever. He sent me an email after the cruise saying he's 600 plus shows. I mean, I'm like, wow. I had to do the math to make sure he even did 600 plus shows, but I guess we have.
Oh, yeah.
He's been listening forever, and he said being on a cruise with Ante Up Cruise was on a bucket list. Your wife had told me when I got on the board that he had terminal cancer, so I knew he was sick, but he never mentioned it the entire cruise. He had a fantastic time. All the players loved him as well. And he said he couldn't wait to book the transatlantic cruise in May, which he did. And then one other email he sent me afterwards was, all the people I met on the cruise, I wanted to meet Gambit, and I never did. And like, was he the guy in the nine seat the last night? I'm like, yes, he was. He's like, oh, good. At least I knew who he was, even though I didn't get to meet him. Super great guy, and very sad to hear on Tuesday that he passed away and won't be joining us in May. And Just one of those super guys. So yeah. Really sad. But for the you folks that sailed on August, I'm sure you remember him. And I just wanted to let you know that. So prayers to his family. So, yeah. All right, now let's get happy. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So Kenton Sumner is the champion of the main event of the Ante Up Winter Poker Classic, Ante Up Poker Tour Series at Gila River Hotels and Casinos Wild Horse Pass. That's just outside Phoenix near the White Castle.
Yeah.
Well, not really near, but
near for you.
as close as White Castle I'm going to get to. Anyhow, Sumner, who fired 3 bullets, nursed about 10 big blinds for about 5 hours on day 2, folks. So there's a new short stack ninja in the house, and I'm never going to beat him on that.
Wow.
When he got to the final table, he had a key triple up. From there, he just did really, really well. Final table agreed to a deal to pay each of them $10,000, and they decided to play it out for the rest of the prize money. Plus that coveted cover of Anti-Up Magazine and a seat in our 2020 World Championship. Once they got five-handed, they made another deal to split up the actual remaining money and play it out for the title and the cover. And
the seat, too. Right? They played
everybody,
the
just seat. A little less than $13,000.
Yeah.
And he went on to win it. And a fantastic champion. Enjoyed talking to him a lot. He was very excited about it, playing. He said he plays mostly online, actually. And he's an older gentleman. I mean, it's kind of tough for me to say old because I'm old, but he's a little older than me. Not terribly older, but but yeah, he's like he plays online all the time and hadn't played live in forever. And he said that our Anti-Up tour event at Vicueva, the sister property, Gila Rivers, which we did in March, encouraged him to come back out and play live. And I think he cashed in one or two of those events. He said nothing great. And then he went on and won 15K in the Arizona State Championship a couple months ago. And then won this. So he's on a little bit of a heater here, and I like the fact that Anti-Up got him back out in live.
Sweet, live. Sweet.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And super excited to be going up to Thunder Valley in July and August for that thing. So good luck to him. But the main event tried 475 entries over 2 days that shattered the $100,000 prize pool. And we'll be back at, as we mentioned, the sister property, Vicueva, in March for another Anti-Up Tour Series. That one right now, it sounds like, it's not official yet, but it sounds like it's going to be a 2-week affair. So that's going to be
nice.
Pretty exciting. And then, of course, we'll be back at Wild Horse Pass next November. One of the other things that was really interesting when I was talking to the Ken, and again, it's funny, I've had the same poker news reporter at the last 4 events with me, so we've got to know each other well, and we always interview the winner together, and then afterwards, we like, hey, that was great, or whoa, that was rough.
Yeah.
And so we're always happy when we get a good interview, and Ken was a fantastic interview. But one of the things that really shocked me when I was talking to him, because I think of, the Phoenix area as having just fantastic poker tournaments, right? He's like, we just don't get good structures here at all, except for these events. So, when he talked about, he got knocked out on day 1, bought him on the next flight. He actually got knocked out in the 5th hand of the 2nd flight. He flopped trip 10s but was outkicked by somebody else that had the case 10. And he got knocked out, and then he's like, well, I fired 2 bullets. I really should go. But I'm like, we're not going to get another structure like this in Phoenix ever, so I might as well buy back in. And it obviously worked out well for him, but just kind of surprising that, and also happy that, that it's our events that are bringing good structures to that area. So,
yeah, yep, very cool.
All right, Amo Nuwara,
yeah.
Writing on Poker News, says the poker community missed an opportunity to send a message to poker room operators this month by not honoring a suggested boycott of a new tournament format at Venetian Las Vegas. As you all might remember, Venetian drew a fair amount of criticism when it announced it was going to hold a new tournament format that had a $150,000 guaranteed prize pool that also featured an additional $52,000 in drawing prizes. No matter how many players entered, the prize pool would not be more than $150. It would be actually $150, no matter what, right?
All right.
And that drew the ire of some players who feared Venetian would pocket a lot of money with the event. And Venetian said, hey, no, it's an attempt to attract table game players who are more familiar with that style of event. So the event just happened a couple weeks ago, and through 5 of the first 6 starting flights, Venetian is well below covering the $150,000 prize pool, let alone the $52,000 in drawings. But a flood of players turned out on Saturday, so Venetian covered, but made very little money on the event. And I guess the gist of what Mo was writing about is that players smelled blood in the water the last day, saw a huge overlay, and even though they all seem to have banded together to say, let's not support this, money talks. And they jumped in and didn't send the message to Venetian that Mo and Doug Polk and other folks like that were hoping would be sent. What do we think?
Again, I can see where he's coming from, and I can see where all the other people are coming from. But again, you just don't have to enter if you don't want to play. And it just goes to show you that ultimately, greed will win out when it comes to stuff like this. If these overlays are just too attractive to people trying to score, you know, a big cash or trying to make a statement. And, you know, I understand what they're saying. But again, you just don't have to enter if you don't like it. You know, do you really think the Venetian's going to do this with all their events? They're not going to take that risk, and they're not going to do that. They were trying to do something different. We didn't have to enter the tournament, you know? It's just, I don't know. I feel like sometimes the poker community feels like they have a lot more power and make more way too many demands than they really need to. There are other things that they could be worried about.
Well, and I think it's the way you go about it, too. You know, I'm not a big boycott fan of anything. You know, yeah, I don't like Chick-fil-A's products, but they make a damn good sandwich, right?
Right.
So I don't get into that kind of stuff. I mean, there is a place in for it. I mean, our history is littered with boycotts and protests that actually resulted in good things happening. So I'm not going to diss anybody that does it. But it seems to be like the go-to thing, right, when somebody angers you or upsets you, and you try to send a message that way. But there are lots of other ways to send a message, and that's what I don't get about this. Is that one? I mean, it's completely predictable that this was going to happen. That if there was an overlay, people were going to go, "All right, I know I told you I wasn't going to play," but
yeah.
So it didn't work. But I'm like, as you mentioned, if you don't like it, don't play. There's all kinds of different tournaments that not everybody likes. I mean, poker players don't agree on anything, right? And boycotting it, just it doesn't seem like the way to go. I think the better thing is to engage those poker rooms in conversations and say, hey, this is why I'm concerned about this format. Are you thinking about doing it more? And if you are, here's why you shouldn't. You know, I know that seems kind of weak to a lot of people out there in this anger-filled world we're in now, but it works, I think. And obviously this boycott didn't work, so... Then going forward, if there's something your poker room's not doing, I think the best thing to do is to talk to the management and get a group of players to talk to the management, and that causes drama that may or may not work. And it doesn't seem like this works. Now, we don't know if Venetian's going to do it again. I mean, they didn't make very much money on this. In fact, actually, I think with the drawings, they might have actually still lost money. I could be wrong on that. But again, it might not have been designed to be a big profit thing. You know, I mean, that was what people were accusing them of. Oh, you're gonna 50% rake off of this. I don't know. I don't know anybody at the Venetian, so I don't know. But I would like to think that possibly they thought this as they were up and up on this, and like, hey, we're just trying to get table games players in. And we talked about this when we talked about on the show before, right? That if these table game players have never played poker, they come into this tournament and they decide they like it, now they're going to play quote-unquote real tournaments, right? So we don't know what the real effect of this was. It might be a good thing for poker players if they would get over their anger over stuff that I just don't think warrants it. But I don't know. It just I'm sorry you think we missed an opportunity here. But
well, some of the greatest ideas have always come from people who think you're crazy. You know,
right.
I mean, it happens all the time. They're like, this is ridiculous. And then, boom, everyone loves it. I mean, you don't even know if something like...
You look at Christopher Columbus. He discovered a new world that was already discovered. Well, Tony couldn't.
And killed a lot of people on the way. But, you know, I mean, think about the Big Blind Annie.
Yes.
Somebody might have been sitting around going, are you stupid? It's a perfect system. We have a half bet here. We have a full bet here. It's going to force them to play action. Why would you want to screw with that? Who's not doing the Big Blind Annie now?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and I'm not saying that this was a great idea. I'm just saying they have the right to try something different to try to get people in. If you don't like it, you don't have to protest. Scott had a great idea. Imagine taking some of the top names in poker who disagree with you, with them, I mean. And those people have millions of followers in their social media channels. They go to you and say, look, you know, before I blast you on my social media for 20 million people, I'd like to talk to you about this and tell you my concerns about it and why you're doing it. If you can convey to me, you know, reasons that would convince me that it's a legitimate, you know, opportunity for you to try to get more players into our community, then I won't, you know, then I'll be happy to tell my readers and followers, whatever, hey, listen, the Venetian is trying something here, and here's why it's good for poker. Or, hey, I got to sit down with them. It's a one-time thing. They realize that it's probably not going to be a good idea, or it's not a good idea, but now they've already, you know, advertised it or whatever. They're going to go through with this one. But whatever, imagine that the power you could have as a community that's united to go talk to them and actually do it, not do some sort of recommended thing for some sort of – what did we say? It was they like suggested the boycott. You know what I mean? No, if you unite together with like the leaders of industry and go to them and sit down with them or something and ask for a meeting, obviously I think you're going to have a much more effective outcome. It just feels to me like we always think, hey, everybody, don't do this, don't do that. And they always think they're going to band together through, you know, social media channels, and it's never enough. Instead, just have really two or three really good effective speakers go talk to the people. You know, I just, again, and the last thing is, no matter what, you know, you don't have to play in these things. You know, here's the deal. If people were really upset with what the Venetian did and the Venetian kept doing it, their poker room would cease to exist. Ultimately, everyone would just stop going there. But over a one-time thing, you lose your shit. I think it's silly.
And the last thing I'll say, because we probably should move on, but you were a really important part of the last time. First time thing, right?
Right.
I mean, if the Venetian came out and said, hey, we're testing this and we're hoping to do this with all of our tournaments going forward. Now, that's a bigger deal, right?
Right.
But, I mean, Venetian runs 1,000 tournaments a year. Like, literally. I mean, they've got series that never end there, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if they want to throw an idea on here once or twice just to see how it works, I mean, this seems like a lot of rage for no reason. So, I don't know. But
I agree.
But we'll see what happens. I'm like, it may never come back, and you guys don't have to worry about it. So, all right. And a feel-good story. We haven't had a lot of feel-good yet on this show. Cynthia Watson, a dealer down at Palm Beach Kennel Club's poker room here in Florida, dealt a bad beat jackpot recently and donated her $400 tip from it to the Connor Moran Children's Cancer Foundation. That's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah. It's a nice little story. And just something to feel good about. I mean, I was happy about the Annie Up Poker Tour and Ken winning and stuff. But yeah, that was a nice little story, nice little insertion there. It's better than shooting up the place because she didn't get enough money.
A little bit different, yes.
A little bit different. That is really nice. All right, Annie updates. Jackson Rancheria and Pechanga Resort in California, Foxwoods in Connecticut, Pearl River Resort in Mississippi, Rivers Casino in New York, and Prime Social Poker Room in Texas are the latest poker rooms to join our Restock the Shelves Food Bank initiative with Blue Shark Optics in January. Go to AnnieUpMagazine.com/restock for more details and urge the managers of your favorite poker room and poker venues to join today. We've just introduced 11 new vintage Anti-Up logo designs on merchandise at our Anti-Up store. Check out t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of the Anti-Up Magazine, Anti-Up Pokercast, and Anti-Up Pokertour logos. Everything is on sale through Sunday. Is that this Sunday or is it the Sunday?
No. I don't know if it's I don't know what the sale dates are now, but if they're not on sale now, they'll be on sale soon.
They probably will, especially like Black Friday, probably.
Oh, yeah, it'll definitely be coming up next week.
So just go to AnnieUpMagazine.com and click on our little store button, then you'll get there. It's not worth mentioning.
Before we move on, I just want to mention at our game on Monday, Dr. Frankie showed up, and he had a purple hoodie that looked pretty nice. Had the new vintage logo on the back, and felt good, so... I'm starting to see some stuff, and then I got my Annie Up beer shirt in the mail right after I got back from the cruise, my last event, and pretty nice. I really enjoyed it. So
that's my favorite one, but alas, I don't drink beer, so it'll
I'll try to make an Annie Up milk shirt for you next time.
Thanks, man. That's right. You know, got Annie Up or something. I don't know what you want to call it, but... if you'd like to be one of our monthly magazine contributors and represent Annie Up in your home area, apply at AntieUpMagazine.com/ambassadors. We have an immediate opening in Michigan. Okay, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is a setup of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up Poker Cruises, available at ClassicPlayingCards.com. I gotta tell you, These cards, man, I've had my set since like the day we met them.
Yeah.
They're still in pristine condition, you know. I mean, if you're in a poker room and they're using them forever, they wear like anything else, but if you have them in your home game, they're going to last forever. They're really good cards.
I hope they last forever ever in the Safety Harbor game, because I brought them a couple of times ago because they're using those paper cards, and I'm like, I can't stand this. And they're like, I showed up on Monday, and they're like, we did two tables, so we only had a set for one. And they're like, where are those G-Design cards? Like, yep.
All right, so anyway, this comes from Les Hanke. He says, I'd like to know if there is a standing rule or variations from card room to card room based on what happened to me at a casino a few years ago. A new 5-10 table opened, and everyone bought in for $1,000. On the first hand, I flop a set of kings and won a $4,000 pot. I hung around for a dozen hands after that, but opted to cash out at the dismay of the others. Being in my mind that I was probably outmatched, as this was my first time at this level, I wanted to bank that cash and get back on the list and sit back in at a 1,000 buy-in, but I was told that wasn't allowed until after 2 hours of waiting. I could sit back in after 2 hours, but would have had to bring my entire... or before the 2 hours is over, yeah, okay. But it would have had to bring his entire 4K stack back into play. Is this a common rule to keep players from hitting runs? Does it vary from room to room? Is it different at different blind levels?
All right, Elliot says, this rule is common to most public rooms. I have enforced this rule at all the card rooms I have operated. Some rooms use only a one-hour rule. The rule applies to all tables of the same type and limit. You attempted to go south with 3,000, however benign your intentions, and the room correctly protected the players by not allowing you to do so. Had you wanted to drop down to a game with lower blinds, you would have been able to buy in for whatever smaller amount you wished, as long as you met the minimum buy-in. Table stakes rules were invented, enforced, and then refined to make sure that public poker games were fair and equitable for all players. In poker games, most players get to make the decision about whether to put the money into a pot after they have received the cards. If we didn't have table stakes rules and let players remove and replace chips at will, there'd be no end to the amount of players that couldn't cover their losing bets but would always have funds available to bet on good cards. As an experiment, play heads-up poker with someone who will be allowed to remove the winnings from the table after each pot they won. After realizing that the player removing their winnings is virtually unbeatable in the long run, the reasoning behind table stakes and the need for the two-hour rule will become very clear.
Yep, you can't go south.
Let me be clear. I mean, obviously, our fan here wasn't trying to, just made a decision that I think everybody has made at some point. I'm like, hey, oh my gosh, I just got really lucky at the stakes, got a lot of money, and I'm gonna lose it. So let me switch and bank that winning. And unfortunately, you know, he needed to move down to a 2-3 table or a 1-2 table to be able to do that. So. As I always said, no matter what your intentions are, now you know what the rules are and why they're in play. And think of it from the other point of view, right? So, you know, if you just lose a lot of a bunch of pots to one guy, and then he gets up and he's like, "All right, thank you, I'm gonna go over to this table and keep all your money," how upset you would be at that? Because you know, there's no rule that you need to stay there so they can win the money back. But if you are gonna play, there is a rule that you have to keep that money in play. So,
well, the other thing I thought was curious was, he wins $4,000, hung around for a dozen hands, opted to cash out. Being in mind that I was probably outmatched, as this is my first time at this level, I wanted to bank that cash. Then he wants to get back into the same game.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm wondering if there was. I gotta assume there was a smaller game. I mean, no poker room I've ever been to starts at 5-10, right? So, but yeah. I mean, at that point, you know, take your winnings and then drop down and put $300 on the table and. Get your poker picks done for the day, knowing that you're not going to lose that $4,000, right?
Is that true too? I mean, do they actually make you sit down with that amount? Like, if there's no max buy-in,
it's
or
game, yeah. That's what Elliot said. Yeah, I mean, you can go to a different stakes and then you're a new player at those stakes.
Okay,
but
yeah.
If you're going to stay the same stakes, and you just want to switch tables and pocket, that you can't do that. So.
Yeah,
still and the inverse of it is that, you know, if you switch tables. And you've won more at the table than the max buy-in is at that table, you're in a game, so you take that money with you. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not like they make you put that all back in your pocket and then put you at a disadvantage with a bunch of players with a bigger stack. So it works both ways. So
yeah, it's just peculiar to me that Les was like, hey, I'm outmatched at this limit, but let me go cash out and then go back into this limit again and try it again.
Well, I mean, I get it. I mean, you're to play poker and you want to play poker, but now you're like, you know, hey, if I play here, there's a good chance I'm going to give it back. I don't want to do that. So, I mean, it's kind of the cake and having your cake and eat it too, kind of.
Yeah, and that's why the rule's in place. So right, you can't just keep skimming off the top.
You can't keep the cake, but you can drop down to a pie.
Yeah.
Your money, so.
Yeah. All right, very clear. Hey, a new O'Malley's move is headed your way. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated in a 50-cent, $1, no-limit hold'em home game. We're six-handed. The blinds post, and we're under the gun with 225, up 25, and the 10 of spades, 9 of spades. This is a decent hand, six-handed, so we're going to make the table standard raise to $3 with Chris's favorite hand. The plus one folds, the cutoff calls, but the button makes it $9 to go. He started the hand with 200 and is a somewhat solid but predictable player. He's going to play good hands here and c-bet most of the time. The blinds fold. We can either catch a flop and bust a big hand or miss and fold, but I like a call here. The cutoff folds, and with 2250 in the pot, we see a flop of the 9 of hearts, 7 of clubs, tray of diamonds. This is a decent flop for our hand, but I'd like to see what our opponent does before I make any kind of a decision. We check. Our opponent makes a $15 bet into the pot. We have top pair with a backdoor straight draw, and we're fully expecting his c-bet here. This might be a situation where a check raise gets him off his hand, but we elect a call in case we're wrong. We still have a fairly decent hand and a lot of cards that can come that we can either bluff on or actually hit. The pot is 5250, and the turn is the king of diamonds. Okay, so this isn't a great card. If he was playing king-king, we're drawing dead. And if he was playing ace-king, we're now behind. I think a check is in order here, and we'll fold to the right bet. We check. Surprisingly, our opponent checks behind. With 5250 still in the pot, the river is the nine of diamonds. So, we hit our trips, but backdoor diamonds got there. Are we worried at all? We have 201 to our opponent's 176. What's the move?
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTrading.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations. The podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And Dr. Frank's in the house, not just with his Anti-Up swag on, but with Hand of the Week this week.
And he's the reason we have J Design playing cards too, I believe.
That's right.
So he's all over the show today.
Absolutely, he's the one who introduced us to him. Yep,
that's right.
And what I like about this hand is he actually told me this hand at our poker club a couple games ago, and then asked me whether it was worth it, and I'm like, sure, it's worth putting on the show. So he emailed it to us. So here it is. He was playing 1-2 no limit at a Florida card room, hopefully without a gun. And he says
he was under the gun.
Yeah, that's right. Under the gun without a gun. The villain in this hand is in the cutoff, and he says, I've played against this gentleman many times, and I feel I have a pretty good read on how he plays. He is an older fellow, even older than me, if you can believe that. He plays very tight, but when he enters a pot, he is very, very aggressive.
that was horrible, by the way. That was absolutely horrible.
Not as good as my Clinton.
Yeah, your Clinton's spot on, but that was horrible.
It is. I didn't have an Oreo. I'm sorry. I did the best I could with that Oreo. Yeah. He says when he has a strong hand, he commonly overbets the pot to force hands out, even if he sacrifices some value by doing so. When he has a strong hand, he would rather lose some value and win a smaller pot than try to milk extra value out, only to get run down. When he misses the flop, he plays passively or folds. Well, all right. So pretty good dossier there on our
Wow. Movie.
We're not done. He says the villain normally would play premium pairs, premium suited connectors, and all big aces, but the room is offering a high hand promotion for quads or better if you start with a pocket pair. For straight flushes, both whole cards must play, so I believe the villain may have opened his range a little to include pocket pairs down to fives or sixes and suited connectors down to 7-8 or maybe even 6-7. He says, I've been playing at this table for several hours, starting with $200. I'm down to squiggly 160. The villain has squiggly 150. Opening raises have been between $7 and $10. I've seen everyone fold to a $10 open, and I've seen four callers to a $7 open. My opening race has been $8 every time. In this hand, I'm under the gun with two red kings.
Well, if we've always raised to eight, then we have to raise to eight.
Got to keep it up, right?
Yeah, you don't want to indicate the strength or whatever, or have them have that in their dossier. It's saying, hey, you know, this guy, when he gets kings, changes his bet. So we'll just make it eight, I guess. I don't know if I agree with an $8 raise, but at a 1-2 live game, but yeah, if that's what he's doing, that's what he's doing.
Always can, but yeah, but that's what you've been doing, that's what you've been doing. So.
Right. So he is under the gun, is that what you said?
Yep, under the gun without a gun.
I didn't know that. Obviously, I don't know this hand, but that's pretty funny.
All right, our hero says, I see no reason to do anything other than raise to my standard $8. A middle position player calls, and the villain who's in the cutoff rather quickly announces a raise to $75. Button and both lines, and it's back on us.
I just shove. I mean, I just shove. What's the difference? I mean, you've only got 150. I would gladly get 150 in with kings.
Right.
I was no way I'd do anything else here. There's no way. Even if he has aces, unless I know he has aces, there's no way I'd do anything else but just shove. He can't fold for 75 more. And, I mean, what's he doing? There's just no chance.
Well, but again, we're only in for eight. Not that it matters, I don't think. Well, it does matter, but I don't think it changes.
No, not him. The guy making it 75. I mean, what's he doing? Why is he making it 75? Right. But I'll gladly shove over the top of this guy. If he turns over raises, hey, I'm coolered, but there's no chance in hell that I'm folding kings in a 1-2 game and have a chance to double through somebody without even having to. Oh, yeah. Oh,
well, especially because I just pocketed 4,000 in that 5-10 game now, so now I'm free rolling here. So.
Yeah, I'm shoving.
All right, so Frank says this is a pretty large raise, so I pause for a minute to try to narrow his range. A lot of players will make this raise with king, king, queen, queen, jack, jack, or 10-10. This fellow would do it with ace, ace as well and be happy if everyone folds and takes out a $19 pot. That's actually a good point. If you had aces there, you really raise to 75. Of course, Frank says this guy would, so that is now a consideration. But, yeah, I mean, really, that's even a more reason. I don't know too many players that are going to raise to 75 there and be happy with the 12 bucks or whatever.
With win 16 or whatever. I mean, it's just not. That's just an unbelievably weird raise. I mean, that's basically 10x.
I feel even better about your into the shove there. So
yeah, I'm shoving.
All right, he says he is definitely not doing this with smaller pairs or suited connectors, except for possibly ace-king suited. My kings are too strong to fold. I consider shoving. Uh-oh, Chris. He's considering, but I don't think he's going to do it.
He's not going to.
But my opponent would play ace-ace exactly this way, so I decided to just call and see a flop. If the flop is safe and the action is check, check. I may wake up on the turn. All right, so so if you're going to go that route, so I'm wondering what's the safe flop? Is that means just not an ace?
I know, it doesn't make sense.
Does it mean not three to a suit or
consecutive
cards?
I don't see how that makes any sense. I mean, you're going to call half your stack off to just hope that there's what on the flop? What's safe? And then just say, I can fold now that I've lost half my stack because it looks scary? I don't understand. If an ace comes, he's not making that raise with ace-king. And if he is, you want to get it all in. So I just don't see the value to calling here.
And if he has aces, that flop's not going to mean anything.
Right. The flop means nothing.
Unless a third ace comes and then you get out. I mean, otherwise, if it looks safe, but he has aces, it's not safe. Right.
If you can put him on aces, you can fold. But if you can't, for $8, I mean, that's it. But if you can't, I mean, I don't care. I'd have to be 95% sure he has aces for me to fold and not just shove free flop.
Right.
But I can't imagine calling. I'm going to get the rest of this guy stacked no matter what I do anyway if I have a better hand. So why not just shove and let him call with you? He's never going to fold for 70, you know, whatever it is for the rest. He's never going to fold for 50% more of his stack. He's already got half his stack in, too. I can't imagine. I just can't imagine a call here. I'm sorry.
Yep, I'm with you. All right, the flop is the queen of spades, jack of spades, four of hearts, and it's on us.
Shove.
I guess here's what I get back to what we consider safe now. So, obviously, queens and jacks might make that big raise, right? And so now we've let them catch up to that. So, I mean, I'm not saying I'm scared of that, but I'm like, this is the problem with the getting to the flop rather than shoving. If you shove, you're going to see all the cards, right?
Yeah.
Now we get our chance to spook ourselves out here. So, I'm going to guess that Frank's going to check here, and then we'll see what happens. But that's what I'm saying. Now you give yourself a chance to get spooked out of a pot that you probably rightfully is yours to own, right?
There's one other thing, too, that everybody forgets. That, I mean, this guy could fold if you shoved preflop. And he could have folded jacks, and now he would have hit a set.
Very good point. Yeah, then you just take that, and you don't have to worry about it.
You have to worry. You know what I mean? So there's so many reasons to shove, and I can't think of any to call. Yeah. So, yeah, and now you're worried about, oh, this guy's picked up a flush draw or a Broadway draw, and now I've got to fade two cards. Or, you know, if he had ace-king or, I mean, whatever it is, or maybe he flopped a set. Now I have to think that's one of his range hands, and now I have. So you just shove. 50% of your stack, with you're going to be left with $70. So just shove. You know, I would shove now, too, after you called, because you got an overpair.
Yeah, it's the other thing. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the thought process of other players are, but at this point, I'm not folding this hamper. There's not an ace here. That's what I was concerned about, if I was concerned about anything, right?
Yeah.
Not an ace here. You know, we both only have $75. So I'm not going to fold for that, so I might as well put it in now.
Yep.
Rather than wait.
I agree. So.
All right, our hero says, normally when I have kings and the flop is three unders, I'm pushing all in. But of the five hands I put them on, king-king is a tie. Ace-ace, queen-queen, jack-jack have me crushed. See, that's what I'm saying. Let yourself get spooked here.
Yeah.
Don't do it, Frank. And he says, I can only beat 10-10. I decide to check. If he checks back, I may come alive on the turn, but I think I may be beat already. I'm checking. Wow.
Hmm.
And you all say, I'm nitty.
Oh, wow. But the thing is, though, is if Frank were nitty... I mean, I don't. How many nits do you know call $75 raise?
Yeah,
you know, I just, I don't know. This is sort of out of character.
All right. Now we check. And our opponent shoves rather quickly for his last $75.
Yeah. I'm still calling.
Yeah, absolutely. At this point, that's what we said. So I don't think it really changes too much whether we shoved or not in the end because the money got in anyhow. But because of that, I still want to shove because you get the option of. Although now if we're ahead though, now we've trapped his last $75, so I guess that would be a reason to check, right? Whereas
yeah,
if we shove beforehand, then maybe he folds and we don't get it. So
maybe.
All right. I don't know. Anyhow, yeah, our mistake was on the flop though. I mean on the preflop, not the flop. So. All right. Frank says if he had 10-10 or ace king, I don't think he would shove here. He's got to have aces, a set of queens, or a set of jacks. Maybe he has king king, and we tie, but this seems like too big of a risk even getting 3-1 odds. I fold.
Oh, wow.
He doesn't show, and I don't ask because he never shows unless he has to. All in all, a very dissatisfying hand.
Well, I mean, it makes you feel better. You saved $75 if he had aces or queens and jacks. But I think if he had queens or jacks, he wouldn't have shoved. Yeah, it's a little bit of a wet board, but, I mean, he has to know you have something. And I'm sure he was thinking, how could you possibly fold there? So that's why he shoved, and then to protect his hand just in case you had ace-king suited. But, you know, I mean, you probably were beat. You probably were beat. But I just, in the long run, I think this is not an optimal play. You know, I think that 9 times out of 10, you're ahead there. And you're ahead before the flop and you're ahead after that flop. And you win a lot more money playing it by shoving preflop than you do playing it the way that was played that way.
Well,
that's pretty unfulfilling,
here, but,
too.
Yeah. But you lost half your stack on this. Didn't get the satisfaction of seeing all the cards and knowing whether you really were behind or not, right? So
Yeah. That's
a double whammy to me. At this point, you know, again with those stack sizes, I at least want the satisfaction of them proving to me that they had me beat. Now I know that cost you another $75, but if you put $75 in, at this point, I'm like. I think you need to put that next $75 in just to find that out for your own peace of mind. Because, again, we talk about the psychology, right? So Frank's still stewing over this probably a month after it happened, right? And that can affect your game. So I think to some degree, I mean, obviously the $75 can buy groceries where just the satisfaction doesn't buy groceries, right? But I wonder how much that satisfaction we could have won, by the way, which is great. But even if we lost, even if he did turn over queen-queen there and we didn't improve, I think that $75 satisfaction might have helped you get over the hand more quickly than you are otherwise, right?
Well, I agree with all that. Here's the problem I have, and it's all preflop. No matter how great his Rolodex of information was on this player. Nobody can put somebody on aces preflop with just the information we had there. I mean, you've narrowed him down to exactly one hand, huh?
Not with two bets, yeah. If you got three or four,
exactly. I mean,
three or four bet, then yeah, then maybe now you can narrow it down.
It'd be one thing if it went raise under the gun, re-raise middle position, re-raise, you know, and then it gets to the guy, and the guy's the nit at the table, and then he shoves for 500. You know the guy's got aces. But in this case, it's a weird bet. He could have been just protecting any pair. He didn't feel like, you know, who knows what he had. And if I know that we always play cash games differently than we play tournaments, but let's be fair. If you're in a sit and go for $75 and you're under the gun with king-king and you raise, and somebody makes an outrageous raise, and you know he can't shove if you shove, can't fold if you shove, you're shoving with king-king there in a sit and go. You're not calling. So I understand that it's real cash, but to me, in this instance, I don't know if I could actually just call there in any situation. I don't know what the reason would be, unless I knew somehow the player was... You know what? The only way I could do it is if the person accidentally exposed a card and I saw the card.
Yeah.
I mean, really, other than that, I have to shove preflop here. And to narrow somebody's range based on past hands, that narrow to exactly one hand. I mean, I know he later on said, here's the five hands he could have done that with, but really only one of them keeps you from shoving. And those are the hands that you had to go through when you saw the flop and scared yourself. But to me, I can't imagine putting somebody on a specific hand after one bet. I mean, and that's basically why he called, because there's no other reason to call unless you are positive he has ace king or aces. Maybe those are the two hands you could put him on, and then the flop comes without an ace and it's rainbow. But even then, who would do that for $75 when the raise is eight and a 1-2? So to me, it felt like it was something small. I mean, I don't know. I'm looking to get it all in when I have king king and I'm short. You know, I lost. By the way, kudos to Frank for telling us he was down money. You know, almost everybody's worked their stack up to double what they bought into. He's admitting that he's down. And so, to me, I'm like, wow, here's my opportunity. I got this guy who's got the same stack as me. I've got king-king, and he made a stupid raise to 10x. I'm going to get it all in with him now. And if not, I'm going to get a free $80 because I got the other guys right bet call in there too. You know, and if he does call and I'm out, hey, you know what? I mean, okay, so now you've really narrowed this guy's range. But, I mean, and now he's stewing about it a month later. If he did the right move and then got beat, then it's like, okay, well, maybe I learned a lesson here. But 9 times out of 10, king-king is good there. More than that, probably. And it's just, wow, that's the hard part for me to swallow. That's probably why I'd be stewing, too, is that I'd be stewing that I didn't get it in. I don't know about the not finding out what the guy actually had being the reason I'm mad, but I'd be upset that I didn't get it all in with king-king preflop in a 1-2 game when I could have doubled through somebody.
Yep.
That's tough. That's tough. I don't see any other way to play it for me. Can you imagine? I mean, if anything, at least if I had to do the call like he did, if somehow somebody twisted my arm with a gun and said, you have to call here, and I called, I'd then at least shove to get him to fold. You know, what if he had something like you said, what if he had 10-10 and now he's afraid, you know, he thinks, you know, it's free to shove and now you've got to be put to the test. But if you shove, now he's going to fold and you're going to get that money back. To me, there's just no reason to not just shove pre-flop or shove after that flop. I mean, I guess that you trapped him for, like you said, you could have trapped him for the 75, but I still call after he bets because you're getting so much on your money with an overpair. And without knowledge of what this guy actually has after just two bets.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a tough hand. Tough hand.
Well, Frankie's a good enough player to come back from it, though. So.
Did he play better in the home game that you were in?
He did. He outlasted me Monday. I left before it was over. But I think he might have cashed. I could be wrong.
There you go. That should make him feel better.
Yeah.
And that we, you know, had his hand on the show, even though we disagree with how we played it. So, what are you going to do? It's poker. At least he didn't get shot, right? That's the best part. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Anti Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.